Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. And you might also be joining us on the Inner Sanctum YouTube channel. We're lucky enough today to have a special guest, Tasmanian Devils under 18 boys coach Jeremy Weberly. Thanks for coming on, Jeremy. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic. Jonty and Nathan, thanks for having me on.
And I guess the first opener, a big announcement last week, as everyone is now aware of, where Tasmania have been handed their 19th. AFL license as the 19th club to get AFL license. What is the feeling down in Tassie at the moment? How does it? What was your initial reaction? Even the boys, how have they taken it? And what's the vibe been at training and just around the club at the moment?
Oh, it's one of excitement, isn't it? It's been something that we've had many attempts to get our own AFL license, and to finally see that come to light is fantastic. So I think there's excitement, number one, but also generally just some pride. And, Tasmanians are extremely passionate about their AFL footy. We're a football state, and to finally be on the national stage in a few years to come yet. But I think there's a sense of pride and excitement, to be honest.
And from your point of view as well, you've obviously been in Tasmania your whole life, I believe. You obviously came through the AFL system via Tasmania. So you've sort of seen the ups and downs in Tasmania. You've been fighting for this for so long. What does it mean on a personal front? And, yeah, tell us about what that sort of fight for that 19th licence has looked like in a more historic sense, I guess.
Yeah, well, I suppose if we start with the second question, I was reading something the other day where I think our first charge, if you like to call it, or our first attempt was in 1996. If I might be mistaken, yeah. It might be 1 or 2 years off there. But, I think there's been 4 or 5 attempts to get into the game, and we've been unsuccessful. And it's just great to finally have that opportunity. As I said before, I'm no different to any other Tasmanian in terms of the feeling. The excitement, I just want it to be now. More importantly, the pride, I think, is the biggest thing for us. We think we're going to be able to compete on the national stage. It's great to show Tasmania off, not just its people and its talent here, but also our beautiful state as well. So I'm no different to any other Tasmanian in terms of the excitement about the opportunity that it's coming for us. And not just for our program and people involved in footy, but, children coming through, both boys and girls that have aspirations and dreams about playing at the highest level, they can do it for their own state now. So I think there's some of the things that are fantastic around the announcement.
And you touch on a couple of key themes there that I just want to pick up. You talk about being able to represent your state, that the Tasmanians will now be able to do at AFL level, and also the pride in Tasmania. I know one thing that you speak about quite a lot, and others involved in both the boys and girls programs from an under-18s Tassie Devils point of view, is the pride and the values that come with playing for the jumper. So before we jump into anything else, sort of tell us about that. It seems to be something that you personally and as a club seem to really stress to the boys and girls that do get to do it. You know, you're the only club up until now that's been able to represent your state in a footy sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were always, I think coaches are always looking, there's game plans and, you have talent that makes up your team and all those types of things. But essentially, all coaches are looking for to connect their players in a way. And I think we have a fantastic opportunity through our jumper, and we've got a map on it, and we're representing something that is ours and representing our own state. So we do a lot of work around connecting our players through that and understanding the characteristics around Tasmania's history, and it's around that really selfless team orientated mentality and attitude. So that's something that we think that's held us in really good stead over the course of the last 18 months since I've been involved, and obviously the due course of the Tasmanians' history. But I think that's a really good way for us to connect our group together. We've obviously got our regional hubs, 3 regional hubs being, Hobart, Launceston and Penguin. So connecting those people together can be quite challenging, but I think we can connect them through the one thing that is constant with all 3 hubs is that they're representing the state. So we do a fair bit of work around that, and we take great pride in understanding what that is and putting that on show every week.
I guess, can you talk on your footy journey? Obviously, you were drafted in 2009, and you had that experience growing up in Tassie and then making the draft. What was, take me back 15 years or so, what was the experience growing up in Tassie and trying to make it as a professional footballer, and what have the differences been from then to now in terms of how the Talent and Pathway programs are set up, and how do you get you know, how do you get to the elite level in Tassie? What's it set up like at the moment?
Yeah, well, the first thing you've got to be identified early on, and you go through, you know, we do a lot of work. Like our talent managers do a lot of work around identifying talent and those types of things through local competitions, and spend a lot of time on weekends at footy. And then, you know, we have development series through under 13s, 14s and 15s. You know, we have involvement with the SSA program as well, which is a School Sports Australia program where our players go, or sorry, Tasmanians go over and represent through the schools program. So we have involvement with that and identification through that process as well. And then essentially your Tasmanian Devils, your representation of the Tasmanian Devils program doesn't come until you're under 16 years of age. So then we go into the Div 2 competition as well, where we play the academies in Brisbane, Sydney, GWS, in both the boys and girls, and NT as well. I forgot NT, unfortunately. But yeah, we play those guys in the under 16s in both the boys and girls now. And then obviously you progress into the Coates Tasmanian Devils program once you complete your under 16 journey. So that's sort of how it's set up right now. I think you know, it's going to be fantastic with the AFL license coming in to see how we can better that system moving forward. So there's a really clear pathway and a really clear direction to follow if you are a talented junior and you do get recognised early on.
And I suppose the first part of that question, what was that like for you to sort of experience, and how have you seen that progress in your role as coach now?
Yeah, look, I followed a different journey through being drafted. Look, I was very small and probably immature through 16, 17, 18. So I had to do it the hard way. I participated in the Tasmanian Mariners back in those days, but I was only ever in the Southern Hub. I never actually made it into the final squad. So I had to go back and invest time and effort into my TSL club in Clarence. And I was lucky enough to get drafted in 2009 through the TSL platform, and we played a state game there, which I was lucky enough to participate in and played well in. I think that obviously helped me, one, through participating in that state game, but also my club Clarence were lucky enough to play in the grand final that year and win it, which I think definitely helped me. But I had a bit of a different journey reaching the AFL level. I wasn't lucky enough to get drafted until I was 21. So, yeah, it was probably very similar setup back then to what it is now. I think our talent identification and our sort of structure underneath our Tasmanian Devils is better than what it was back then.
Yeah, and I suppose to extend on that, Def, with the introduction of that 19th licence, tell us about how that's sort of going to benefit the depth from a talent pathway point of view. I suppose we see with the Jack Jumpers, just to reference them, how much basketball seems to be taking off in the state from things you read. No doubt the same thing will happen with footy, with the identity it already has, let alone what it will now gain as a result of that. So tell us about the vibe of junior sort of footy clubs when you are going out and watching, and how you see that growing.
Yeah, look, it's the reality is the more people you have playing the game, the more talent you're going to have, right? And there's no different in footy or basketball or any other sport. So we're really hoping that the announcement around the licence and granting us an AFL team is going to mean that we have our participation goes through the roof, and we're going to hopefully have a VFL and VFLW teams in the not-too-distant future, which gives a really clear pathway for all our kids coming through. And at the moment, I think, and I might be need to be corrected here, but it's my understanding that our participation rate up until under 12s is really strong, and then we fall away a little bit. We seem to lose people to the game and all those types of things because they choose other sports, whereas I think having a clear direction and understanding about, you know, we're going to be in the AFL, there's a really clear pathway to follow. I think that's hopefully going to hold a number of players, both boys and girls, in our programs. And we'll see the fruits of that, you know, the fruits of being granted the licence, and we'll have, you know, stronger participation through those teen years, which is, I think, is going to really be really important.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about the talent hotspots down there. I see participation. When you do some research, it comes up that Clarence, Hobart and Launceston seem to be the areas where their participation is the highest. Does that translate into talent hotspots when you do get to that sort of 16s level?
Yeah, that's probably true. Look, we've obviously got the two TSL clubs in the north, in North Launceston and, yep. and Launceston. They've been powerhouses in the state league for a number of years now. And there's no doubt that their one talent identification and development talent's fantastic. And there's a pathway for players to follow to reach the, you know, to make sure that they're following the pathway in terms of playing community footy, being recognised, potentially heading to a TSL club and then into the Devils program. I think that is has been really beneficial. Clarence is, I've had a lot of involvement with Clarence, obviously coaching there for 5 or 6 years, but Clarence has got a really strong zone. You know, their zone is big. It's a young zone as well, in terms of there's a lot of the young families and it's a developing area and those types of things, and they've traditionally been really strong through their juniors. And if you look at their junior clubs, both Brighton and Lindisfarne are huge growing areas. They've had a lot of success over the last couple of years with their draftees. Like, you look at Sam Banks and Jack Collins, another one this year, Fraser Turner a couple of years ago. So they've had a number of players, Tom McCullum and Cam Owen last year as well. So they've had a number of players over the last couple of years that have reached the top level and been lucky enough to get drafted. So, and if you look at their TSL senior team now, it's very young, but a very exciting group. So, it sort of ebbs and flows through TSL clubs, depending on where the population is and how it's working.
Yeah, and what, so you say it ebbs and flows. Is that just part of the natural growth for other clubs? Is there things that other clubs can do to sort of get up to speed with your Clarences and your Hobarts, like you say, or is that part of the ebbs and flows and the natural growth?
No, I think it's part of the ebbs and flows. Yeah. Like, I think most TSL clubs are doing a really good job with their talent identification and bringing young talented players through. So, it's obviously there's a number of things that are associated with the makeup of your zone and areas will go through ebbs and flows in terms of their age demographic and those types of things as well. So, I think all clubs do a fantastic job within the TSL and at community level as well about identifying talent and bringing it through.
And what is the archetypal Tasmanian footballer that you've probably realised and seen coming through the, coming through Tasmanian's development program and even now coaching it? What do you look to get out of these boys coming through? Do you see a difference in the boys that are making it? We had Lockie Cowan last year, who I'm a big fan of, being a Carlton supporter, and he's been fantastic. And you just see that grit and determination, and he's just been fantastic. Is that something that's really brought up through the development ranks in Tassie?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Look, I think there's firstly, I think that, and I've only been in the role 18 months now, but the first thing I noticed when I got the role was that players come into our program having a really good understanding around what it takes to make a good team. And also they have a really clear understanding around the game and they have good football brains. So that's a credit to their junior coaches and their senior coaches coming through, that they're providing that resource for them and their knowledge. So I think what you'll see with Lockie, Seth Campbell, Tom McCullum, Sam Banks, like they're very, very educated. They have a really solid understanding of the game and they know how it needs to be played. And there's no doubt, like Lockie's a prime example. He's got some opportunity at AFL level in his first year, but his contest and defence stuff has been outstanding. He just looks like an AFL player now. And there's no doubt that having a really clear, obviously you need the physical attributes and the physical skill, but also you need to make sure you've got to have the right personality. You've got to have a really clear understanding around how the game is played, and I think that's one thing that I've noticed in my first 18 months here, is that all the boys that come in and girls that come into our program understand what we're trying to achieve, and they have really good game understanding and game knowledge.
No doubt something that would need to be, I suppose, no doubt an important factor behind those boys' growth and also the girls that are coming through as well, would be having coaches that are all on the same page. I suppose another element of this is the coaching depth down there. What does that sort of look like? Tell us about, give us an insight into that.
Yeah, look, I think the coaching talent down here is very good. We've got very good coaches in the Devils program that have got a lot of experience and some AFL content as well. And then, you look around the TSL programs, you've got Mitch Law, who was drafted to Hawthorn, and he's come back and invested time in the state. He's won 4 or 5 premierships. You've had Taylor Whitford and Zane Littlejohn in the last couple of years that have gone over to the mainland and been involved in Brisbane Academy, and Taylor obviously going and being involved in Melbourne. They're both coaching VFL clubs now. You've got Peter Ryan at Clarence that has been involved in Brisbane Academy as well at junior level, and now he's coaching TSL. So Alan Christensen is coaching the Lawndale Footy Club. So there's so many great young coaches around the state that have got AFL experience, both from a playing perspective or a coaching perspective as well. So I think the talent in terms of the coaching ranks is fantastic. Aaron Cornelius as well has been at Glenorchy and helping out Maverick Weller with the state team this year is another one that's been exposed to Brisbane Lions. He's been exposed to the Hawthorn Footy Club as well. So, yeah, there's no doubt that our coaching ranks down here are very good.
Certainly, it's an impressive CV that you've just sort of read out. What sort of responsibilities do the, I suppose, assistants in the Tassie Devils program have, given that you do have satellite hubs who operate like big country, I suppose, clubs that our listeners would be familiar with? What sort of responsibilities do they have, given that they would have to run and coordinate those training sessions?
Yeah, well, they're basically like a senior coach in their own region. And that's how we treat it. Like, I lean on them a lot to, you know, although I send out training plans and have, you know, they have a clear understanding about what I want, the reality is that they control their regions and they make sure that they educate their players on how they see fit to one, get the most out of them, but two, to give them a real clear understanding around, you know, how we want the game to look and how we want it to be played. So they're essentially a senior coach in their own right, except for game day when they come in.
Yeah.
You know, they've got their line-specific roles, but, yeah, they look after. So I'm very lucky to have Mav Weller on the northwest coast, who's obviously, you know, been under some outstanding coaches and had a great AFL career himself. So he looks after the northwest region. It's been outstanding through that process. And Darren Crawford controls the north of the state for me in the North Hub, who's, you know, was involved in the Tasmanian Devils back in the VFL days and had an outstanding career with North Launceston. So I'm very lucky with some of the assistant coaches that I've got around the state, and they're doing an outstanding job at this present stage in developing our talent and making sure they perform on the weekend.
And I guess sort of the last talking point back on the talent itself, the boys, and I thought it was an interesting topic. I mean, being Tasmania, you are the only team who really has to travel by playing every week. You know, you'll have obviously the Melbourne teams come in every second week, but is that an advantage for the boys? Because obviously that's realistic to what, if you're getting drafted, you're going to have to travel quite a bit, especially if you're an interstate team. Is that an advantage you've seen in the talent league program, that your boys do have to be able to perform to a high, you know, high standard and reach high performance levels, even when they might have to get up a bit earlier each morning to make that flight and play interstate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's got some major benefits. Like the first one is I discussed before about connecting our regions together, and we spend a lot of time at the airport together, and I think that's a great thing for us. And obviously hotel rooms and all those types of things and eating dinner together, I think that's really good. And it also gives them, again, it gives them that experience if they are lucky enough to get drafted or to go play VFL footy or play in the sample, that they get that experience of travelling and, you know, making sure that their routine pre-game and all those types of things is correct, because they get that experience every second week. And I do think it helps us connect our group together, because we get to spend obviously a chunk of time together that, you know, other clubs don't get that opportunity to do that have satellite hubs.
And I guess the last thing to really round it off, what should we expect from your boys for the end of the season? What are the goals from a coaching perspective and even just, you know, talent-wise, what are you expecting out of your boys to round out? Still a long time to go in this season, but what are the main goals for you and the team?
Oh, look, it's just individually, it's about making sure that we're continuing to develop, and we don't want to leave any stone unturned as an individual from an individual perspective. As a collective team, we want to make sure that we're bringing effort every week and we're competitive, giving ourselves an opportunity to perform well and show off the Tasmanian characteristics. You know, we believe that if, you know, as an individual, you control your energy and control your intent for the contest, and you look after the person next to you, that as a collective team that will perform well and be competitive every week. We've got a really young group this year. I think every week we've had, you know, 8 to 10 players of 17 years or 16 years of age. So we've been really excited about the talent we've got coming through. But I suppose as a whole, we're looking to continue to represent our state extremely well and make sure we give ourselves, you know, we give each other an opportunity to put ourselves on show.
Well, awesome. Thank you very much for joining us, Jeremy. It's been a pleasure and great to talk about this news in a different depth and perspective. We really appreciate your time. We'll be moving on in this second part of the podcast to the Vic Metro and Young Guns review. But thank you, Jeremy, for your time. Really appreciate it.
No worries, guys. Cheers.
We're now moving on to the second part of the podcast, which we were at the Vic Metro and Young Guns game, the first of two games of that Young Guns series. This was at Trevor Bark Oval. There will be a second game, Vic Country and Young Guns, which, Jonty, you'll be at this weekend on Sunday. But we'll have a general chat about this game like we have previously with the trial games a couple of weeks ago. We'll go through the players we thought performed well. As far as we're concerned, the lists have been finalised, but there hasn't been an official confirmation of that. So when they are released, we'll just talk about it and just, you know, have a bit of a chat about who made it and who didn't make it and what we should still look, you know, who we should still be looking out for. But we'll touch on the overages first. So Archer May, Bo Tedcastle, Paddy Cross, Jed Longmire. Archer May and Bo Tedcastle probably the two main talking points out of that game, especially Bo Tedcastle.
Yeah,
a bit of his background came. He's an NT boy. We found out, and he played GWV Rebels last year, and now he's at Richmond VFL. But he kicked a few goals and was very lively all around, taking some good marks. And it was bucketing down rain pre-game, but it seemed to not rain a single second during the game, which was great for a viewer perspective. Archer May also pretty impressive, I thought. Took some good marks, gotten some good spaces, but couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
Especially at that early stage.
Yeah.
But what was your perspective in terms of those overages?
Yeah, I think those two that you touched on, yeah, Bo Tedcastle had that sort of zest inside 50 and Archer May showed some really strong attributes overhead. Paddy Cross won on the wing that I know the coaching staff, the young guns were really happy with. Obviously, it can be a difficult role to play, but he sort of played that well in terms of holding his shape and width and that sort of thing. But yeah, got into a lot of good positions and won his fair share of the footy. And Jed Longmire, the time that he was on the field, you could tell that the young guns were a much better team and certainly brought an element of leadership to that. He's playing Collingwood VFL this year. He's from Murray. He played for Murray last year, played one really good game against the Sandringham Dragons. And Paddy Cross is a boy that plays locally at Narnagoon. He's KC VFL listed this year. And last year, he was a strong operator in and under for Gippsland. So they've all had talent league background. But I suppose to move on to the rest of the young guns that are still listed with their talent league programs, I think the standout from that point of view would have been Ziggy Toledo-Glasman. I know we've spoken about him quite a bit and I'm pretty high on him with his athleticism and that sort of thing. Kicked three goals up forward and took some really nice marks. How did you see his game?
Yeah, I thought it was very impressive when we're comparing it to the trial games a couple of weeks ago because I mean, we did chat about it. I sort of came out thinking he's got the traits but it just doesn't feel like there's just enough there. But I feel like this game, he really did show the impact he can have at his size because that's the whole question. Will his size, you know, will it match it at AFL level? Because he's not tall enough to probably be that key forward. But he was impressive. He kicked a couple goals in the end, which is obviously what you need to do. His position was really good and was being rewarded for his positioning as well. He was getting himself in the spots where the ball was coming in. It was, especially on a day where it's a bit unpredictable where the ball might go at times when kicking is a bit off, he was still finding the right spots to move and be presentable at the same time. Good contested marks at times and couldn't really fault his effort, I think, and his performance.
No, couldn't fault his effort. I mean, even his decision-making was lauded by the coach, which, you know, that's not a trait that he's necessarily has been lauded of his in the past. You know, he's got other strengths. But, it was an all-round strong performance, I think. Will Elliott, another one in that sort of key forward mole of his role. He's obviously at a lot taller than Ziggy Toledo-Glasman, but a much stronger performance from him than what I saw 3 weeks ago, I think, which was his first game back from that knee injury, which has kept him out of his top 8 year last year and had kept him out up until that point. Just sort of blew out the cobwebs, thought he showed some positive signs. He'll still build into the season, no doubt, and has a lot of improvement left in him as that raw player, but kicked a really nice goal at ground level where he sort of feigned to go one way, went the other, and and did it really cleanly. So yeah, I thought that was a an impressive sort of eye-catching moment, and it was a good performance overall from him. And Levi Young, another one inside 50 for the Young Guns, kicked a couple of goals, and his pressure was pretty good for a player of his size, and he adapted to the run of the game quite well, which is impressive for a player who has no talent league experience. Of course, Levi Young, the son of Colin Young, who's a big figure out there in Perth, player agent as well.
There you go. Well, I mean, that was probably from the Young Guns perspective. I think we've touched on all, if I'm correct. Yeah. So, yeah, look, I mean, obviously it's an important game for actually both sides, considering this isn't an official Metro team that played. It's still a deciding team in a way. So it was actually a very important game for both teams, which you like, because it actually pressure on all, you know, in all areas of the game. Let's move Metro now. We'll start with Jordan Croft on this list. Four goals, very impressive. I just thought he was, in terms of that tall leading forward, he was just doing everything right, and he was kicking him from very good angles as well, must I say. Like, usually the tall forwards, and we've spoken about this, just love the snap. That just seems the thing they want. He was nailing drop punts from the pocket, and I think he kicked two in that manner. Very impressive game. I'd love to see more of it continue. I hope it wasn't a one-off, because it was very good traits, but then you can fall into the trap of just, you lose that form, you lose that momentum, and it feels, you don't want to turn up once every couple games and have that good game. But he was impressive. Your perspective on his
game? For me, it was probably the athletic attributes he showed, and his ability to cover the ground, and that sort of in and out step that he had that really sort of probably caught my eye. So it's as good a game as I've seen him play. So hopefully it's sort of up-leveled his game and he can sustain something around that level for the rest of the season. It was certainly an exciting game. A teammate of his at the Calder Cannons that I thought was also among the better players for Metro was Moody Taha. I know I've been high on him, but he's really good in an under midfielder. And then, you know, you talk about his kicking as well. He executed some really nice kicks. There are a couple of kicks inside 50 where he hit a target exactly as he needed to, and he even finished off a couple of goals as well. So I thought that was a strong performance from the Bashar Hooley Academy prospect. And, yeah, had him as probably the best midfielder on the day, or certainly in that vein.
Yeah, well, I think something I think I've spoken about before is, like, separates probably those real high-quality midfielders compared to your, like, elite midfielders is the ability to, you know, look inwards when you're moving down the field, and that's something he's got, his inwards vision, especially to find a leading forward. Sometimes you can just have that sense of kick and hope, right? Just get it in, bomb it as long as you can, but he was, you know, looking wide, and that's something you want a midfielder to have moving down the ground instead of that bomb and hope a forward's going to latch onto it. So, yeah, he was he definitely stood out. It wasn't his best game by any means, but it was, like, one of those games where it shows the traits very well, does what he needs to do. And then probably segue into someone who showed his traits really well, and we won't touch on him too long, Archie Roberts, because obviously we've heard a lot about him, but that was just the perfect Archie Roberts game, I thought, in terms of holding his shape really well. He was always in the right spots to move the ball forward and didn't get sucked in to move forward as well. How to just held back, defense first mentality. That was really good from Archie.
He turned it over a little bit, but that's sort of forgivable given the conditions. He provided that drive that you really wanted. So, yeah, himself and I suppose Nathan Flacktides. I thought Roberts was better than Flacktides, but both of them racked up plenty of the footy, the AFL Academy prospects. A teammate of Archie Roberts, who's also highly rated, Will Brown, showed what he can do as a big-bodied midfielder. We know how good he is at clearance, and he was able to go forward and hit the scoreboard three times with majors. So thought it was an impressive game on his behalf. And I suppose you could move on to a couple of bottom ages as well that really caught my eye, Zach Johnson and Luca Grego. Luca Grego just had some nice moments, and Zach Johnson just has that little bit of polish, I thought, even on the day, which wasn't necessarily a day for those polished players, but also a tackle, which really probably caught a lot of people size because it was right in front of that grandstand where all the recruiters, or, you know, a lot of the recruiters and watchers sit, where his opponent, can't remember who it was off the top of my head, just tried to zig then zag and go around him, and he just sort of stood his ground and got him holding the ball. So, yeah, just some really nice traits. Whether he makes Vic Metro or not is probably immaterial given his age. He's shown enough impressive traits, and I'm sure he'll be there next year if he does continue on his trajectory. So that were probably two of the standout bottom majors. Isaac Kakko hit up really well. Maybe field kicking let him down at times, didn't hit the scoreboard, but still showed enough as a bottom major, I thought, and no doubt he'll probably, I would think, be around the Metro squad this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just quickly on Zach Johnson, if you weren't at the game, it's on baseline, that tackle. So
there you go.
Yep. There you go. It is. I'm pretty sure it was on baseline. I've seen it somewhere else. So
yeah.
It was a good tackle. It was definitely, like, in terms of anywhere it could have been on the ground, right in front of recruiters, that is that was just great timing and great position on the ground. Let's talk about – I want to talk about Cooper Trembath. You brought him – you sort of talked – you're the one who brought him up a couple of weeks ago as one to watch, and I've started watching him, and you see those draftable traits starting to shine. And pre-recording, I said – probably was like, all he needs to do now is just show improvement, and he might not, he doesn't have to have a standout game probably as of yet. Obviously you want it to start, it does need to come, but now it's just about showing that linear improvement, and he did that. He was really good just one-on-one. I thought he just held his own. I mean, it was obviously with the conditions, it's hard to take marks of these anyway, but he was just, I thought he just showed that physicality, that pressure in the air didn't get caught, you know, over the shoulder, which can be, that just happens sometimes where defenders go for the punch and get caught over the shoulder. But he was just holding his ground really well, knows how to move his body well to win those one-on-ones, and if not win them, just bring it to ground and create a contest.
Well, that's what I think he did really well, where he wouldn't have won more than 8 or 9 touches on the day, I don't think, yet it was still a really impressive day, particularly in the first half, where it was just little things that he was able to do, even shepherding for a teammate and that sort of thing, that you see that he's going to have the ability to do that with some of the body positioning and understanding of that role. So it wasn't like the round one game against Sandy where he took 7 or 8 intercept marks, but still impressive nonetheless. So yeah, really, really satisfied with what I saw from him. And I suppose to move on to probably the other really impressive player from a Metro perspective, I think the final one that comes to mind off the top of my head is probably Josh Docking, just how clean he is. You know, I know you've been a fan of him and advocated for him, so I'll let you sort of take the lead, but cleanliness in wet conditions was something that was really eye-catching, and obviously playing his school footy at Halebury, I'm sure that will give him a lot of confidence going forward. They had a bye this week, hence the Taj Houghton and Charlie Harrop and these sort of players were able to play, Archie Roberts as well.
Yeah, well, he's one. I mean, I sort of picked it up from, I think it was Sandy's like intra-club match, which is like now, you know, 2 months ago now. Just that quick burst speed, evasiveness, and again, good vision on the ball, which is what you need. And he took a while to get into it, I think, on Sunday. Wasn't a start to finish, but when he got into it, he was into it. And I think that's actually something I've noticed now. He might take a bit, but once he gets his hands on it, he gets on it, gets in a good rhythm. And he was really impressive. Just good composure on the ball, took a good intercept mark as well on the forward 50. I think it just missed that kick, actually. The set shot he had literally just scraped the post. It was a very impressive kick.
Yes, it was.
Right in the pocket of the forward 50. Yeah, it was.
You can't underestimate how good that intercept mark was.
Yeah, it was very impressive. I'd be surprised if he doesn't get selected. Fingers crossed. I think he's done enough and showed his traits really well. But I'm sure he'll continue to do that at school footy level. And when he comes back to Sandy later on in the year, I'm sure that will shine as well. And probably another Sandy one that we probably can quickly mention, Charlie Harrop, was... I feel like I've had mixed opinions on him just because I'm just not sure if he's shown enough consistently. But I think this game he did, probably he definitely lifted it up a level from the trial games, I think, and it's just kicked a good goal actually. In from it was one of those sort of wobbly snaps from close range, but good spatial awareness as well. His ability to move up the ground was really prominent, and he was there when the ball was dropped to the ground. He was usually there and making an impact, laying a shepherd when he needed to. good teammate traits as well. As
strong through the core as well. And strong through the core, but good teammate traits. You say he's captain of Halebury, so that probably shows that. And I think he had some cricket commitments in pre-season, which prohibited him from getting any sort of leadership role at Sandy. Otherwise, I think he would have. But, that they're probably the main ones. Like other players like Tarkin O'Leary had a couple of really nice moments and that sort of thing. And I think there were nice moments from a lot of players, even Josiah Nanup on a day that didn't necessarily suit the type of player he was. It was good to see Mitch Sipkowski, obviously, highly rated last year, get a run around. And Jovan Petrić played in defence, usually plays up forward. So there were a few other little tidbits from the day. But I think we've sort of covered the main players. Taj Houghton did a couple of things. But, yeah. That none others that come to mind straight away as being real standouts.
No, not really. In all honesty, actually, I quickly touch on Logan Morris and his ability to play up forward and back. I thought he was actually really strong down back, which that's so good in terms of versatility at this age to be able to play both ends. Really was just stood out. Like it wasn't a standout game for him by any means, but I just thought, just a general note, thought that was something to keep a watch of and. Something that was impressive.
Yeah, he's done it a little bit at Western in the first month of the season, but we've obviously seen that he's kicked bags of goals as well, so he's clearly strung up forward.
Well, that wraps it up. We're learning to keep this shorter in order to compact as much as we can, and we've done that, we think, right in this episode. So we hope you've enjoyed. Big thanks to Jeremy as well for the first half of the podcast. It was great to have him on, and it's a big news in the AFL world in general, and he's really the beginning of it all for these players. So that was a great chat. Next week we are looking, well, we will talk about Vic Country and Young Guns game. The All Australian under 18 team is rumored at this point in time, but I think it will happen. They are meant to play Carlton's VFL on Saturday, so I will be at that if that is the case. So that will be half and half conversation next episode. And then Carlton League is back, actually, next week. It is back on finally. It is back on the Friday night for the boys, Danny and Oakley. We will be at that game, but obviously that will be in two episodes' time. We'll review that. And for the girls, it is back on the Saturday with two academy teams playing, Murray and Tassie, on that Saturday. So it is back. We will do our tips again next week, so... thank you for all for watching. Make sure to subscribe as always. Follow our socials for more content and with players and coach quotes, etc. So until then, we will catch you all in the next episode.